this is more of a frustrating way to end it, obviously, but I thought at times in the season we showed a lot of really good things, a lot of resilience from our group. Tonight, obviously, it's a game of inches out there, and like Mitchie said, we had some chances. Puck didn't go in the net, and it's obviously a tough pill to swallow, but it's very disappointing.
Well, James, it is over. The 2019-2020 Maple Leaf season is in the books. I guess that doesn't surprise you totally, given the way things went all year.
Yeah, and even in the series, I think I messaged you yesterday before the game saying they're going to lose, right? Like,
You did, and I was like, how could you know? What could you possibly inform that?
I don't know. It just...
In some ways, I'm serious. Like, yeah, I actually don't know what gave you that inclination.
I don't know. It just was like, that's just how I felt about the Leafs this year, and that it just didn't feel like the year that they were going to... I mean, I guess they could have pulled it out, but the way that, like, if I had to predict how that game was going to go, I would have predicted like a 1 or a 2-0 with an empty netter kind of game, and that was it. And, you know, it's really interesting the way that Sheldon Keefe went down swinging, and he's taken a lot of criticism today with, you know, for putting Nylander at center and for going with the big line and for dressing Andreas Johnsson. And, but there's no guarantee that if he didn't do that, like, the outcome probably still would have been the same, no? Like, if... There were a lot of games and stretches in this series where he gave those other lines a lot of room to show what they could do, and they didn't do anything. So I understand why we did.
Well, to play devil's advocate, because I'm not sure I totally agree, we gave him all kinds of credit for being willing to experiment, to be creative, to try different things, to try Mitch Marner with Auston Matthews for an extended period, to try William Nylander with John Tavares. But I do think in that situation it went too far, in that he was trying things in an elimination game that he had not tried all year. Right. Like Marner, Tavares, Matthews had played together a bit, but not a lot. And there's a ripple effect on the rest of the lineup in that you've got a second line with Nylander, Kapanen, and Hyman that's never played together. You're moving Nylander to center for the first time all season, except for the game previous in an elimination game. And then you've got a third line that also has never spent any time together. So it just felt like it was too much the other way from Mike Babcock, where it was too much, I'm willing to just try all kinds of different stuff. Whereas I feel like you do need a little bit of familiarity. And granted, like maybe they score on one of those chances that Tavares has and they win the game and it's different. But it felt like it was too much the other way. I don't know if that swings your opinion at all.
I guess, you know, the thing with the Jonas is it's almost like they were in desperation mode right when the game started. And they didn't necessarily have to be. You know, Keith could have went to those lines once they were down 1-0, or, you know, maybe if you get into the second period and it just looks like what you're using doesn't have it, and then you start switching things up. And the thing, too, yeah, is that that All-Star game line wasn't really what saved them, yes, in game four. It was 6-on-5, and it was the power play that got all those goals. So, yes, those players were on the ice together, but it wasn't quite the same thing. And the problem, I think, against a team like Columbus, especially with Werenski being able to play, is that they match up really well against one-line teams, and you really turned yourself into a one-line team if you do that. So I can see the argument for both sides. But I do understand why Keefe did it, just because he was, and he explained after the game, he was so concerned that they weren't going to have enough offense.
Well, and it's very concerning. And he also mentioned that one of the things that led him to it is that second line, centered by Tavares, just didn't have anything. And that's really tough. Like, your big advantage in a series like that is that you basically are supposed to have two number one lines. And whoever played with Matthews, like, Matthews almost didn't need anybody around him. Like, he was kind of doing everything himself. But the guys around him, the guys that you're paying a lot of money to be impact players weren't really impact players. Like Mitch Marner did not have a good series. That's, if you look at the last two playoffs, James, that's 12 games that he has 0 5-on-5 assists. He had no 5-on-5 points in the series. William Nylander, I didn't think was very impactful. He finished with, you know, fewer shots 5-on-5 in the series than Pierre Engvall, one more than Martin Marincin. And John Tavares was just okay. And that's tough in a series like this. Like that is supposed to be your advantage, and it just wasn't an advantage in this series. Do you feel like that, like, can we boil it down to that? Like, if your stars aren't going to be stars and you're paying them half the cap, it's tough to win.
Not just that though, Jonas, like how many goals did they get from the third and the fourth line? Like if one of your top two lines gets stymied, you need someone.
Yeah.
In the playoffs, you need someone else to step up and you need to get some goals from unlikely sources. And Columbus got that in some of these games and the Leafs never did. They got the one goal in game three from Nick Robertson. That was the only goal they got from a depth forward the whole series. And the only goal they got from a defenseman the whole series was the weird shorthanded one that Cody Ceci randomly scored. Like they didn't get offense from defense. They didn't get offense from the third and fourth line. They didn't get enough offense from the second line. Like it wasn't just a matter of Columbus shutting down their stars. They shut down everybody other than Austin Matthews. Yeah. and the power play played well, but they
No, I don't agree with that.
You don't think the power play played well?
I don't think the power play was. No, I think the power play was excellent, obviously, in that one overtime, but I generally think the power play looked about the same as it did. I guess that's not true. That one game where they had the five opportunities, they had some looks around the net, but obviously they didn't score. I didn't love their power play. It felt a lot like it did as the season rolled along. It just kind of felt a little stale. But you're right. Like you can win. You can win that series if your stars are shut down. Like it's that old playoff thing where the top two lines cancel out. But if your third and fourth line can win you some shifts and score you some goals, you can win. But Kasperi Kapanen, I didn't think, had a very good series. Kerfoot didn't have a great series. Their fourth line had that one game, but wasn't giving you anything offensively, and that's it. Against a defensive team like that, that's it. That's
Mikheyev didn't do anything, you know.
No, yes, that was a big thing.
Yeah, Andreas Johnsson looked like a guy who hadn't played in 6 months for some reason. You know, it's
well. So let's stop on that. You seem surprised by that decision. I guess I was surprised too. Do you think it was too much?
I mean, I don't think he played very well. I don't think he gave them. I think the only way it might have made sense is if you put him on the fourth line to play 6 minutes, but you didn't want to break up the fourth line because they had a good game the game before, but then they didn't have a good game in this game, and I don't know. I didn't see anything from Johnsson there that he gave you anything different. I almost would have just went with Robertson and hoped that maybe he could have, you know, maybe you play with Robertson with Nylander or something and he can set him up, or I don't know. Like it's so tough. Like it's like Matthew said off the top, it is a game of inches. You know, it is, you know, the Leafs can talk about how their shooting percentage was really low and how they had higher possession and expected goals in a lot of these games. And, but that was the game that Columbus wanted to play. Like, you know, Columbus doesn't care if they're only have 47% of the possession, you know, that's fine with them. As long as they're opportunistic and they can get a goal or two, and they can, I mean, that's, and their goalies were great. I mean, their goalies were excellent. You know, they had two young goalies making nothing they both had great series. And that was a big factor too, you know. But it seems like the Leafs are running into good goalies all the time when they get to the playoffs.
Well, and let's be honest. Like, their goalie wasn't good enough in the most important moments of the series. He just wasn't. That second goal to Columbus, when they're trying to just get one, that kills you. That is just devastating. And you can even look back at the two games previous. When Columbus comes back to one game, he's a little shaky. In game four, obviously, the Leafs come back. But even, you know, when Columbus jumps out to a 3-0 lead, he's a little shaky. He just feels – he doesn't give you that feeling that he is going to – I don't know how to – like. I'm trying to think of a goalie who gives you that feeling, but like that he is going to stop everything and give you every possible chance to win the game. He feels like the goalie who's going to give up that goal. And I don't know if that's totally fair to him, but his performance in, you know, game seven last year, game seven the year before that, and obviously in game five against Columbus, I just didn't feel like he was there when they really needed him.
Game one was big too, right? Like that one Atkinson goal ended up being so huge in the series. Like if the Leafs could have found a way to win that first game, even the comeback when the Columbus scored the three quick goals in game three and erased the, you know, if Anderson would have held the door a little bit more for them, you know, I kind of think, Jonas, said that's the last game that Anderson plays for this team. I think that they'll try something different there.
I actually think they should. I've come around to that. You had mentioned that during the pause that was something that they should do. I am on board with that. I don't think you can come back with him for another year and another playoffs and expect a different result. He just hasn't given you that indication that he is that guy that can push you over the top in that situation.
Yeah.
I want to make a couple more points. You brought up Robertson. I think that the folly of that decision is that the underlying numbers for Robertson were not good. I can't deny that. He looked physically overmatched. He looked a bit lost, like you would expect someone in that situation to look. And yet, as you mentioned, he scored one of their 3 5-on-5 goals. He had some of the better chances of the series. And in a game like that, when it's so, so, so close and you just need one goal, it almost feels like you have to like push past all the underlying stuff and just say, you know what? This guy has a chance of scoring us a goal to win a game. And in a series as tight as this one against a team as tight as Columbus, we need that. And we need that guy in there. Well, and I kind of think maybe they just overthought everything a little bit.
Well, look at Andreas Johnsson's underlying numbers were shitty too, right? So it's not like you... If Johnsson had like was a little bit more ready and hadn't been like he had major knee surgery and missed so much time and the other thing too is that Johnsson didn't have a very good season, so it's not like you're getting back a Hyman or someone like that. It's I don't know.
Well, and James, like unlike the other guys, so here's the thing: like at some point he was going to play, and so he was going to be jumping in no matter what. But unlike his teammates, he had no games. Like he didn't even have exhibition or he didn't have any scrimmages. And one of the disadvantages, obviously, for us in not being able to cover practice, we don't know how involved he was in practice. So we don't know, you know, how much they saw in those practices to give him the indication that he was ready. But it's a big ass to have a guy come back in an elimination game, having not played in 6 months after major knee surgery. That's tough. And then obviously they lose Tyson Barrie for most of the game. And when you're already without Jake Muzzin, that just kind of limits your options even more when, like, the other options are CeCe and Marincin and a young guy like Dermott, and basically they're playing tons of Riley and tons of Hall.
It really highlighted that they don't have enough on defense, didn't it? Like, they, like...
Yeah.
I think, like, Columbus, if they would have lost Werenski for that game, they would have been better able to sustain themselves than the Leafs were losing Muzzin. They just, like, Columbus had... I know Columbus felt really confident going in that they really liked their top 7, 8, 9 defensemen. Like they really liked the guys like Nudivara and Dean Kukin, some of their even Scott Harrington, who played a little bit. Some of their fringe guys they were really high on. You can't say the same thing about the Leafs. You know, they got to go into next year finding a way to be deeper at number 6, 7, 8 than they were this year. Because look how many times they were missing 2 or 3 defensemen and they had to play those people in significant minutes. And then it happened here in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's a really good point. Well, and you're relying on, you know, Travis Dermott, who's still really young. Suddenly you have to use Martin Marincin, who's basically been a scratch for most of the last few years. And you know, it comes back to something we've talked about all year. You know, the Tyson Barrie thing didn't work. But like all these... A lot of the issues that were popping up during the season became issues in this series. You know, the mental wherewithal, whatever you want to call it, that came up. Defensive problems, not defensive problems, but problems on defense, those came up. Depth scoring came up. And Marner and Tavares didn't have, like, great years by their standards. And obviously Frederik Andersen didn't either. And it's kind of like the way... it deserved to go in some ways based on the regular season. Like I know you mentioned Keith and, you know, the shooting percentage and there, that's sort of fair, but
at some point, like, you need actual tangible results, and they haven't.
Well,
had
they, I mean, they could have won that series, right? Like, it was so close. It was so close, sure, that they could have won it. But I think I think if you're the Leafs, you want to get to a place where it's more decisive when you play a team like Columbus. Like, Columbus is not one of the best teams in the NHL. Columbus, no. Columbus is a slightly above average team that's good defensively. And I knew going into the series, I was like, this is going to go five games. This is going to be really hard for the Leafs. They have to try and get to the point where, you know, like, if Boston was playing Columbus like they did last year in the second round, Boston's not going to be thinking, you know, it's going to be a much easier matchup for Boston than it is for the Leafs. And that tells you something about where the Leafs are right now.
Yes, that's a series they should win. That was the first time that they should win a series, and they did not win a series. And, I mean, you can just... if you want, you can boil it down to giving up a 3-0 lead in game three, like that. That can
I think
the
that
series.
I think that and the goal and game one where they didn't generate enough offensively and they allowed the one goal from Atkinson to be the difference. Those two games are the ones that stand out to me as, you know, if the Leafs could have won game one and game two, or they needed more of a killer instinct. Like, I think what happened in game three is what we saw a lot during the season, where they get up 3-0 early. And then there's something in, like, the monkey mind of the Leafs where it's like, we got this. This is going to be easy. These guys aren't that good. We're so good. We're the Leafs. And they just gave it away. You know, the goal that Dubois gets when they're up 3-0, that Dubois gets to make it 3-1, it looked like the Leafs didn't even care. And that goal ends up mattering.
Yeah. I don't know that that's... It's obviously not that they don't care, but it's like a focus that's missing. Like, I really, the quote from Keefe about the Blue Jackets, I thought was really interesting. He said they stay absolutely fully committed into what they are.
Yeah,
and it kind of feels like that's what the Leafs aren't at this point. Like, we don't really know what they are, and they don't stay committed to it for more than a game at a time. Like, it got a little much that they kept bringing up resilience, that they were a resilient team all year. I don't think they were a resilient team all year. I think of the opposite.
Yeah.
As we
especially discussed, like, in game, and when they hit some adversity in a game against a bad team, it was sometimes they would be like, check please, and that was it.
All right, James, we are going to take a very quick break. We'll come back and talk about the future. We'll talk about what's next, which I guess is the future. But first, a quick word from Indochino. All right, James. We're going to talk a lot about what's ahead for the Leafs, but we can briefly get into it now. Where would your mind be at if you were Kyle Dubas right now? What would you be thinking?
I think that he's got a lot of time here. The draft and free agency is not for 2 months. It's not till October 9th. The Leafs are probably not going to play a game that means anything until mid-December at the earliest, and potentially not till January. I think they're going to have to do a full-scale audit of what they think this team is and why it is the way it is, and ways that they can potentially change the mix that they've got. You know, I think there's going to be a lot of focus on how dramatically do we need to change the roster. How can we get them to have more of that killer instinct or focus or whatever you want to call it? Which players are bought in on kind of the identity that we want the team to have, and which ones aren't? And then go from there. You know, I think that they're going to need to do is identify the players they are absolutely not willing to move, and then everybody else they can think about long and hard whether they're willing to move them or not, and see what they potentially could get for them. I think it's going to be a busy offseason. I think that there's going to be some surprising things that the Leafs do. And what exactly those are that process starts now for Kyle Dubas and his staff.
Well, let's look at a couple guys. So I think we can safely say that CeCe and Barry are gone, both free agents. Right.
There's no money. There's no money. There's no money.
And I don't think there's will to bring those guys back. I don't think there should be. I wrote during the pause about Kapanen that I thought the Leafs should hang on to him. I am not as sure about that as I was before. I wasn't even that sure at that point. But when you're talking about focus and commitment and all that stuff, and you look at who he is as, you know, a first round pick, I feel like maybe this might be the right time to sell. Like, maybe this is just what he is. Kerfoot, I'm not sure he can be your third center. And Anderson, those are the kind of the three big ones that come to mind for me that I would really look at moving. What about you?
I kind of think they might go higher than that. So,
okay. So who's that?
I mean, I think the door's open for anybody except Austin Matthews or John Tavares, who has a no movement clause. And I think that, you know, what I'm trying to say is they haven't decided on what's happening yet. Like, they don't know, right? So it's impossible to predict what's going to happen. But I don't think it's kind of like nobody's safe other than the two centers, you know, and they're going to really think long and hard about, like I said, what worked and what didn't. And, you know, last year they made some pretty wholesale changes in changing the blue line and trading Kadri. And I feel like this year could be even more significant. But we'll get a better idea, you know, on Wednesday when Dubas and Shanahan and people talk. And we'll get a sense for how much they defend the team they have now and how much they talk about staying the course and being patient and all those things that Kyle Dubas has talked about a lot. But I think the thing that people need to realize is that I'm not saying this, and I don't think the Leafs would do this in response to one close game they lost or one close series that they lost. It was more what happened the entire year that defined the season for the Leafs and that caused concern. And I think you're right. I think that Kapanen and Anderson are probably the most likely candidates to not be back. But I think there's a possibility, if there's a trade that they like, that someone higher in the lineup is targeted. So, and there's not that many names that are higher in the lineup that aren't Tavares and Matthews. So I probably don't even need to name who they are.
Well, let's name them. It's Nylander and Marner. And I would say, I'm going to write about this, so this is very top of mind for me. I would be very careful. I would be very, very, very careful. But one thing I do think they need, and, you know, there's been this idea in the market that they need grit and, like, they're not big enough and all that stuff. I kind of think what they're missing a little bit, and they got rid of it, you know, in past years, is they're missing a little bit of competitiveness and a little bit of bite. And you look at some of the players that they've gotten rid of over the years, like Kadri, Connor Brown, even Zaitsev had his flaws, competitive, Roman Polak competitive, Ron Hainsey competitive. They're missing a little bit of that, like on their third and fourth lines and on D. They kind of need a little bit of that David Savard and Boone Jenner. And I don't know, like hockey's such a funny thing. Like you're trying to find like these intangibles to balance your team. But it just feels like they're a little too, I don't want to use the word soft, but they're a little bit too finessey, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So I talked to a bunch of other teams, and I talked to some people around the Leafs last night, late after the game. And, you know, one name that came up is someone said they need a Matthew Tkachuk. Like they need...
Yes, like a shit disturber.
They need someone who's like... And ideally it's someone who can play on the wing with Tavares or Matthews, who's just like causing a lot of problems for the other team. Yeah, it's interesting you raised Boone Jenner. I thought he had a great series. I mean, it's not like he was all over the score sheet, but he was really hard to play against. He was big. He skated hard. You know, they could really use, like, I know they tried to bring that in Kyle Clifford, but they need someone higher in the lineup that's like that. And they need someone that has a little bit of skill that's like that.
Well, you know, the guys I'm thinking of, like, just over the years, like, Alex Burrows played that role perfectly for the Sedins. Right. And it feels like they're kind of missing that type of guy. And Hyman, you know, is that to some degree, but he's one guy, and you kind of need a little bit more nasty. And I feel like, and this is something he never said, but, like, you always got this impression that that's kind of what Mike Babcock felt was missing a little bit.
he always mentioned size, but that's why I kind of feel like he liked like a Connor Brown, because he wasn't nasty, but like there was like a get up and go that was there. And they just feel a little bit like too much the other way, where it's, you know, I don't know, like just, yeah, too much finesse feels like the thing. Do you have any other thoughts before we wrap?
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned lottery. Martyr. Yeah. Well, I mean,
we
this
should talk about that briefly.
Well, the podcast might be irrelevant by the time the lottery happens if the Leafs win it. So basically, if the Leafs win the lottery, they got a 12.5% chance of getting Alexis Lafreniere. If they don't win the lottery, their pick goes to Carolina, and it's going to be a really good pick. It's going to be 13th or 14th overall, which is pretty well the worst-case scenario.
Marner?
I don't know. This is hard to talk about, Jonas, because we don't know the outcome. Yeah, I mean, if you get someone like Lafreniere, then all of a sudden, you know, Nylander or Marner are more expendable because you've got someone that can replace those minutes who's going to be on a much lower salary.
But you were going to say something about Marner. I just wanted to give you a chance to...
No. Yeah, I was going to say, you mentioned Marner and Nylander as people they could potentially move on from. The list is bigger than that. Like, the list is bigger than that. It's everyone on the D-Core. Everyone. There's no one safe on the blue line.
So you're talking about Riley.
Dermott, Hall. You know, I think that the reimagination that the process they're going to go through now is going to be almost total. And I'm not saying that they're going to trade everybody and blow it up or anything like that. But I think that if you want to change the mix on your team, you have to be willing to contemplate a lot of different things. And they're going to have to make sure they make the right trades. Like, they can't make another Kadri for Barry trade. They have to trade for... It has to be more like... This is not the greatest example in the world, but this is the one that comes to mind. It's more like a Ryan Johansson for Seth Jones, or Panarin got traded for Brandon Saad, kind of really changing the dynamic on your roster, kind of a trade.
And see, those are good examples of why you need to be very, 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 very careful, because Chicago ended up making a bad trade, and you could very well argue that so did Nashville. Ryan Johansson is not, he's kind of just like a 2-3 center.
I'm thinking about it on the other side, though, Jonas. I'm thinking about it from the team that did well in the trade.
Yeah, so. But in this scenario, when you're talking about Nylander and Marner, you're giving up that guy, in all likelihood. So anyway, that's something we can delve into more. We are going to get more into that next week. We're going to do like a big wrap show. So we will talk very soon, James. It's been fun. It's been a crazy year, and we'll keep delving into the Leafs, because there's lots more to talk about.
And thanks again, as always, to people for listening. I mean, I think the podcast really grew in popularity through these playoffs. After every game, I was getting tweets from people saying, where's the podcast? And just for our sanity, we didn't want to record it at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, so we're doing it the next day. So thanks for hanging in and waiting for us. And if you have friends or family members that aren't subscribed, get them to download the app, theathletic.com/LeafReport. 40% off. We're not going anywhere. We're going to be doing this every week, other than when we have a little bit of vacation time.
Well said. Thank you, James. We will talk soon.